Welcome to today's edition of the Rush 24/7 podcast.
What do you mean we didn't pay the bill? I can't believe they're charging us in the first place. I am a powerful, influential member of the media. I hate these kinds of screw-ups. I just learned about this right before the show began. Not enough to put me in a blue funk. Anyway, greetings, my friends, and welcome. It's Rush Limbaugh. Here we are at Hump Day already, the fastest week in media, and this is a Wednesday. Get this day behind you. You are over the hump. Telephone number, you want to be on the program today, 800-282-2882, the email address rush@eibnet.com. You all know that Mark F. Lee Levin, my nickname for him, is a very close friend of mine. And, of course, I am the reason why everything good that has happened to him has happened to him, and he knows it. And he's highly appreciative of this. He's got a great book out. I know that you know I'm an animal lover, and you animal lovers out there I can't tell you how you are going to be moved and affected if you read Mark's book. It's called Rescuing Sprite, just a shelter dog that they rescued and it died. Old age and some other things. It was never fully healthy. Sprite wasn't. There are other dogs named Pepsi. And I remember this was about, maybe it was last year at this time or 2 years ago. I mean, the time goes by, but there's a thing down here every November at the Breakers called a Restoration Weekend, and Mark shows up and is a participant in it. One night we all got together after it, and Sprite was still alive but fading, and Mark was just profoundly affected by this, as a lot of people are when their pets are sick and you know that you're going to have to put them down. Sprite finally died, and they had the vet came out to the house and did it, and the effect that it had on Mark was overwhelming. There were a lot of people concerned. He was talking about giving up his career and so forth. So a lot of us rallied, and he decided to write a book about it as a means of therapy, as a means of reliving his experiences with the dog, and of also sort of purging the pain and getting it out. And he wrote the book. During the whole process, he's talking to friends about it, and we're all offering input. I can't describe for you the whole process of writing the book. Those of us that were involved with, we didn't write it. He did, but, the emotional pain that he was going through is on every page. There's nothing about politics in this book. It is as much from the heart from anyone that I've ever read about anything. Now, I have not read a whole lot of, animal books, but it's not a big book, but it's just recently out, but it's just a tremendous body of work on the affection that a human being can have for another living entity, human being, dog, a pet, or what have you. Now, Mark was on Hannity and Colmes earlier in the week. And Cookie watched it, gave me a couple sound bites here. Naturally, the sound bites that Cookie gave me are about me, about Levin speaking about me. And I don't talk about myself that much, as you know, and I'm not really comfortable doing it. But I want to play these two sound bites for you. Hannity said to him, by the way, the full title of the book is Rescuing Sprite, A Dog Lover's Story of Joy and Anguish. You describe the hours, and you go into detail waiting for that clock ticking that day 12 noon was the time the vet was due to come to your house to put the dog to sleep. How'd you get through it?
Rush was very supportive, and other people who are my friends and I reached out to, and, you know, it got so upsetting to me, frankly, I almost quit my profession. I just said, you know, what good is it to be behind a microphone talking all the time or to be a lawyer? You've got people out there. You've got doctors and nurses and vets and people who work at shelters like his wife. They're saving lives. You know, they've committed their lives to others' lives. And I got to think, what the heck am I doing? Just talking on the radio.
Yeah, well, he did mention that to me, a bunch of emails and so forth. And I fired back. I'm not going to tell you what I said. That's some of it's in his book, but that's for him. to divulge. He's going to be here, by the way, on the 16th. He's in town at the Restoration Weekend, and he's going to be here in the studio for an interview. We rarely do it, but this book is unique. I know there have been a lot of animal books, but maybe I think it's so unique because I know and love Mark so much. And I know that he was not kidding here when he said he's thought about giving it all up, thought what he was doing was meaningless and worthless compared to the people that were trying to save his dog and to save other human beings and so forth. Alan Colmes didn't got in the accident, but to reevaluate what you write in your book, quote, I didn't want to go on the radio anymore. Maybe I don't want to do my career anymore. Maybe I want to give it all up.
Well, I was talked out of it by Hannity and Rush Limbaugh, and a big chunk of the money I get from this book is going to go into these shelters and these animal welfare places.
Very interesting exchange of the book with Rush.
Yeah.
An instant message exchange.
I think people will be fascinated by that, yeah.
And he showed you, as Sean did, a great deal of support.
Right. A lot of people did. And so and all during the book, the process of writing the book, Mark was fretting, nobody's going to care about this. Nobody's going to have any interest in this. I said, you wait. This thing is going to be huge. Your publisher is going to tell you that they're not going to print that many copies because it's just another dog book. And I said, they're going to misread the market. You watch. This thing is going to go ballistic. It's going to skyrocket because this book is going to have it word of mouth. Once people start reading it, which they have, they're going to talk about it to other people, and it's going to explode. It is in the process of exploding now. They've already had to reprint from their original printing. So I just wanted to let you know about it. Mark will be here. It was a week from Friday. To talk about the book. I don't want to talk too much about it because I want him to do it, but he will be here then. Again, the name of the book is Rescuing Sprite, A Dog Lover's Story of Joy and Anguish. All right, now we get to the stacks of stuff. Now, you know, yesterday, folks, we were going to talk a little bit about Hillary, but I cut back. If you point at me and start mouthing at me without talking to me, yes, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. So what Snert, he's pointing at me and he's shouting at me, but of course he didn't turn on the IFB mic. So I have no clue what he's saying. He just told me, this is why they hate you. You got this whole thing started over a week ago over this illegal immigrant driver's license thing, and now it's mushroomed, and the Clinton support teams are trying all kinds of different strategies to make this go away, and it's not going away. Yes, you're right, Mr. Snertley. It will result in a much, much larger target on my front and on my back. We're going to go back and relive this whole thing. I think it's time now because there's been enough time pass. People may not realize what this is all about, what started this. I mean, Clinton's out there attacking Obama. Obama's attacking Clinton. The Hillary team's debating what color her pantsuit should be in the next debate. Should it be black to show power, or should it be pink or orange to show lady fruffles and this sort of thing? Oh, this is what happens. Of course, as she says, I'm your girl. And when you're a girl, you got to worry about your wardrobe and what it says about you, what it projects. And this is what we're dealing with here in a presidential campaign. So anyway, we're going to go back and we're going to relive this and get you up to speed with some of the current comments. Because it's now people are starting to wonder, this is really funny, people are starting to wonder if Bill Clinton is trying to sabotage Hillary with the things that he's doing and saying. Does he really want her to be a president? Does he really want her in the Oval Office? Does he really want to have an East Wing office? You know, which first ladies are in the East Wing. But there's some other news before that we'll touch on right after this brief timeout here. Stick tight. Because we'll be back before you know it. Boy, they hate me up in Alaska. And a local TV station's up there in Anchorage are totally misreporting what happened with the little the young woman that testified in tears before the committee. I think it's hilarious. And it's one of the reasons why drive-bys continue to lose. You people in local media are going to have to understand that there are 22 million people that hear this show every day, and you cannot get away with misrepresenting or lying. But what I say, too many people know it. You're going to get called on it. You're going to convince some, but you're going to get called on it. By the way, Rasmussen has a poll out. Hillary is plummeting. She remains the front runner, but by a narrower margin out there. Her lead in New Hampshire over Obama has narrowed from 16% prior to the debate to 10% after the debate. She lost 6 points. And she's going to keep losing more as long as this story stays alive, which we are going to keep alive. She also, she's down, she'd never fallen before 37% in New Hampshire. Today she's at 34%. So she's plummeting out there in some of these states. All right, try this headline. How many of you, first of all, how many of you believe, because you have been told over and over and over again, that if you were overweight, you're going to get type 2 diabetes, you're going to die, kidney failure, heart attack, and if you smoke, you're going to die, that if you're overweight, we're not talking obese. If you're obese, of course, you're already dead, you just don't know it. But if you are just overweight, you are going to die. So everybody's on these fitness crazes, going to the gyms. When they finish the gym, they go to the tanning salon. When they finish with the tanning salon, they go to the steam room. All these things. Get this. Two stories. Washington Post. Being overweight isn't all bad, study says. Carrying in or excess pounds does not increase the risk of dying from cancer or heart disease. Being overweight boosts the risk of dying from diabetes and kidney disease, but not cancer or heart disease. And carrying a few extra pounds actually appears to protect people against a host of other causes of death, according to federal researchers. The counterintuitive findings, based on a detailed analysis of decades of government data about more than 39,000 Americans, support the conclusions of a study the same group did 2 years ago that suggested the dangers of being overweight may be less dire than experts thought. The take-home message is that the relationship between fat and mortality is more complicated than we tend to think. Really? This statement uttered by Catherine Flegel, senior research scientists at the CDC in Atlanta. It's not a cookie-cutter, one-size-fits-all situation where excess weight just increases your mortality risk for any and all causes. But there, of course, they had to go out and find the critics of this. Walter Willett, professor of epidemiology and nutrition at Harvard, said, this is just rubbish. It's just ludicrous to say there's no increased risk of mortality from being overweight. From a health standpoint, it's definitely undesirable to be overweight. Now, Flegel and her colleagues raised the possibility 2 years ago that being overweight was less risky than feared. Their analysis of data from decades of federal surveys concluded that people who were overweight but not obese had lower overall mortality rates than those of normal. What we're for those of you in Rio Linda, mortality means death. I want to keep them included here in the discussion. So people who were overweight but not obese had lower death rates than those of people with normal weights. Having a little excess poundage seems to insulate you and protect you from some of these diseases, because when you get them, you have a little bit more sustenance with which to fight them. The New York Times has the same story, just a different way of writing it up. Their headline is, causes of death are linked to a person's weight, but they point out that the whole thing is been misreported, as the Post story does, that being a little overweight, not talking obese, may actually help out in the fight to live. You hear about Dennis Kucinich. We have the audio of this coming up. Little guy goes to the floor of the House, wants to impeach Cheney for beating the war drums and a number of things, and so Pelosi and Hoyer, they had to circle the wagons. They had to move fast to stem the tide of embarrassment here. This is what happens when the left-wing kooks get hold of the party. The sound bites of this are hilarious. Do you people remember constantly, I tell you, people ask me, why are Republicans go to Washington? Why do they end up going to Washington and end up wimping out? Why do conservatives, once they get there, decide that they need to moderate a little bit and be a little libs? And I said, there's two reasons. The libs run the town. The libs dominate Washington, of course, in a professional sense. But I said, you also can't rule out the social aspects. Politics is showbiz for the ugly. And the ugly, even if they're in politics, people in showbiz like to have parties. And they like to be invited places. and they like to be invited to people that they like. They want to hang around with everybody once the workday is over. The social aspects of Washington are huge, but they are so huge now that the Washington Post, I'm sorry, Maureen Orth in the Vanity Fair, the December issue, has written a piece about how the social scene in Washington has died. It's entitled "When Washington Was Fun." And, of course, the centerpiece for this article by Maureen Orth, who is Tim Russert's wife, by the way, is Sally Quinn, who, during the Clinton years and before, was the doyen. If you didn't get invited to a Sally Quinn party, you didn't count. Now Sally Quinn's bored, and she's been bored for quite a while. Nobody has parties. The people in the White House go to bed at 9 o'clock, except when they have state dinners, which is twice a year max. Clinton used to have state orgies all the time. The Democrats loved it. Well, they were orgies. I mean, you should have seen what went on after the dinner in there. The drive-bys, they go out and they get these old babes that used to run the social scene in Washington. They get them every couple of years to complain how boring Bush is, how boring Republicans are. But Bush just had a huge state dinner for Sarkozy last night. Anyway, this piece is at Vanity Fair, so it's very long. And they get quotable lines from everybody who is anyone in the great city of D.C., and they're all trying to remember their heyday. And you know what the big complaint from all these people is, aside from the fact that there isn't as much partying going on and there aren't as many dinners and invitations, is that everything's now a fundraiser, that the need for money is such that even when people do have parties, they are fundraisers. They're not just gathering to be convivial and to have a good time and to, see who's the most popular in town. Here's a Sally Quinn quote. "Since Hillary has been here in the Senate for the last 8 years, I think I've seen her twice. Otherwise, she's at fundraisers. She entertains constantly, but it's all political. It's people who work for her or raise money for her. The Clinton second term was mired in a Lewinsky scandal, ended with the president's shocking 11th-hour pardon of Mark Rich. Favored hostesses during the time were Clinton fundraisers, who are now hoping a second Clinton presidency will provide a new opportunity to shine. One of the most aggressive contenders still vying to become a successor to the likes of Pamela Harriman is Beth Dozeritz, the former Democrat National Committee Finance Chair." So they, in addition to having their eye on the White House, they can't wait for the party scene. They can't wait for the real orgies and dinner parties to gin back up once again. This piece goes back and talks about the Kennedys and Camelot. What a great, even credit Reagan for doing a lot of entertaining. Now, I mentioned Levin's book. One thing here before we, after the break, get to the Hillary story all over it. I got this email yesterday. "Dear Rush, may not be your cup of tea, but we would like to send you a real-life pet tarantula. We strive to be the top captive tarantula dealer, bred tarantula dealer in the USA someday. We have about 3,000 tarantulas at the moment. If you allow us, my wife and I would like to send you a nice, large display-type tarantula, an enclosure, lighting, and care instructions. Punkin will probably not care a whit about the tarantula." Ha, 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 ha. I don't know. There are no pictures, so I don't know what the display looks like. But if Punkin sees it moving and can get to it, it's history. These tarantulas are very quiet. They don't smell. They don't demand attention. They're nicer than most all liberals that you've ever met. Please let me know if you were interested. Tarantulas, isn't that what one of the... Did Ernst Stavro Blofeld try to kill James Bond with one of those? Yes, I know. And I happily, honestly acknowledge it. Rush Limbaugh, I say it, you believe it. Here on the EIB Network, don't doubt me. 800-282-2882. See, here you go. This is the AP. This is our old buddy, Nedra Pickler. "Bill Clinton was hit with caustic criticism Tuesday from his wife's Democrat rivals, who accused the popular former president of falsely comparing questions about her candor to smears of past campaigns. They've tried the Swift Boat thing and it didn't work. Bill went out there and said, the same thing happened, John Kerry, it's the Swift Boat stuff, and that didn't fly. The strategery of, poor little girl, you can't hit the girl, minding your own, that didn't fly. So they're up there in Chappaqua strategizing now, trying to figure out how to get out of this mess. The week after Hillary Clinton's campaign accused her rivals of piling on, those don't want to see that mental image of the Democrat candidates piling on Hillary. Ooh. When I first heard that, you know, I thought I could come up with a better phrase so as not to create that image. Anyway, they show no signs of easing up in the piling on. Her opponents even went so far as to criticize the former president, a strategery that comes with risks in a party filled with voters who admire him for rest. That's not the risk. Democrats don't like Clinton Inc. turned on them. Well, well, well. You know, Obama has criticized Hillary Clinton's drive. She wants this too much. She's too calculating. She's too secretive. And he's out there attacking Bill Clinton because Clinton attacked him. And so it's not that it's... See, in the media's eyes, you can't touch these people. You can't criticize the Clintons. You can't talk about them. You can't be critical. It's a risky strategy because so many Democrat voters love Bill Clinton because he rescued the party from oblivion in the 90s. The real risk is having Clinton Inc., the Clinton War Room, aimed at you. This is why, and Snerdly had it right at the top of the program, this is why they so despise me, because this story has been going on over a week. And it was started by me. I put that question about driver's licenses for illegal immigrants out there in the media, and it got picked up by Russert. I mean, we'll never know if that's actually how it happened, but if not, it's a very unique coincidence. Here's how let's review Russert's question. Tim Russert said to Mrs. Clinton, in terms of your experience, this is not the driver's license. This is the other issue. We'll go ahead and stick with it. This is not just driver's license. This is about not releasing her records of communications between herself and her husband when he was president, she was co-president. She's saying, I've got all this experience, and they won't release any of these documents. So anybody can see what really happened. Well, we're going to release the health care task force documents. We don't care about those. We know what a debacle that was. We know what you tried to do there. It's the documents that detail your conversations with Bill about other stuff, like Lewinsky and Paula Jones and other policy things that we wanted. The selection of Janet Reno as attorney general. I mean, if you participated in that, you're going to be selecting the attorney general. We want to know what role you played. These are the documents they're talking about hiding. Well, they're making some show that the archives is in the process of getting them out. But as Newsweek pointed out earlier this week, I'll mention it after the bite because it's relevant. Tim Russert said, in terms of your experience as a first lady, in order to give the American people an opportunity to make a judgment about your experience, would you allow the National Archives to release the documents about your communications with the president, the advice you gave, because you well know President Clinton has asked the National Archives not to do anything until 2012.
Well, actually, Tim, the Archives is moving as rapidly as the Archives moves. There's about 20 million pieces of paper there, and they are moving and they are releasing as they do their process, and I am fully in favor of that.
But there was a letter written by President Clinton specifically asking that any communication between you and the president not be made available to the public until 2012. Would you lift that ban?
Well, that's not my decision to make, and I don't believe that any president or first lady ever has, but certainly we'll move as quickly as our circumstances and the processes of the National Archives permits.
Now, what was unknown at the time was that Bill Clinton had appointed two people to supervise the handling and the archiving of these records, these documents, at his library and massage parlor in Little Rock. And those two people were Bruce Lindsay and Hillary Rodham Clinton. She knew full well when she answered this question that she was involved when she said, well, that's not my decision to make. I don't believe that any president or first lady ever has. There's some documents that they have said we're not going to release till after 2009 or until 2009. This is not going away. What the Clintons expect, that whenever they say something, issue a denial or make it a lie or refuse to answer, that that's it, that the question gets dropped. But for some reason, some of her opponents in the primaries here have decided not to let go of this, and some in the drive-by media haven't either. Drive-by media is upset that she pulled a gender card. Now they're making fun of the strategical moves that she's making to try to handle the damage. There's no question. You know, everybody talks about how secretive the Bush administration is. The Bush administration can't hold a candle to the Clintons and secrecy. And you'd also would think, let me just human nature thing. If these documents showed brilliance, if they showed great decisions, if they showed a woman really, really involved in some of the great, quote-unquote, things the administration did, don't you think they'd be eager to get them out there? And by the same token, this reluctance and this hiding behind, well, presidents have a right, and they can sequester these documents for whatever length of time they want. Not doing anything illegal here, but don't you think that if there was something good in there, they'd get it out? If there's something bad in there, they would be trying to hide it. So their move here, their strategy is leading a lot of people to wonder, what are they trying to hide? Well, we thought she was the smartest woman in the world. And if they've got evidence of what a brilliant first lady and co-president she was, I just think that they would be out there. Now, Clinton, he decided to go after Russert. This is next in the timeline here, wagging his finger over Russert's question about his records. This is last Friday in Redmond, Washington. He was out there doing some motivational talk to the Microsoft employees. This is a little bit off mic, but this is what he said about Hillary and Russert in the debate.
In all my born days watching presidential debates, Tim Russert holding that letter up to my wife and telling the American people that that was a letter from me to the archives to cover up records involving her and to make sure none were released by 2009. That is what he said. Do you agree that's what he said? You asked the question, so I'm asking, why did you ask the question? Because of what he said on the debate, right? What did he say? Truth is, Hillary didn't know what he was talking about. The implication was that in the last few weeks since she'd been a candidate, I had endeavored to cover up records involving her. You agree with that? That was what people thought when they heard that question.
Well, it's true. You got those records sequestered. But what also is not true, Hillary didn't know a thing about that. She did. You put her in charge, along with Bruce Lindsay, of archiving these documents. Hillary didn't know anything. Newsweek said that anyway. Newsweek reported it this week. Clinton then went on to explain the facts and how Russert's question was breathtakingly misleading.
She was incidental to the letter. It was done 5 years ago. It was a letter to speed up presidential releases, not to slow them down. And she didn't know what he was talking about. And now that I described to you what the letter said, you can readily understand why she didn't know what he was talking about. It was breathtakingly misleading. Now, I don't know whether Tim Russert, I've never seen him deliberately mislead people. So it could be that he just read what was in Newsweek, which is also dead wrong, and believed that because it was in Newsweek, it was the gospel.
Well, now they're trying to deny that they've put a far-off date as the release date for these documents? They did do that. And now they're trying to speed the process up? Something doesn't fly here, folks. Something is very, very fishy. And very, very defensive here, I might add, that they are breathtakingly misleading. Hillary didn't even know what he was talking about. How can they continue to portray this woman as the smartest woman in the world, hands-on, she knows everything? She knows nothing when controversy comes up. She's as ignorant as that lamppost down the wall in your street. She has absolutely no clue. She says what's going on with any of this, and nobody believes it. This is the price. You know, when Clinton says this, we all sit here and marvel at Clinton's lying. And we sit here and marvel at Hillary's lying. They don't think they are. You know, it's an interesting psychological thing. And I read a story today that some psychiatrists have done studies. It took two groups of people. People that are very moral and try to be very moral all over the place and asked them if they ever cheated. And another group asked them, do you ever not cheat? Do you try to be as ethical as possible? They found that both groups thought that they were the epitome of morality and virtue, including the people who admitted that they cheat and will lie. That was their morality. Now, the conclusion is here that you make up your own morality. So when Clinton says, I did not have sex with that woman, Ms. Lewinsky, not a single time, ever. I never asked anybody to lie. He believes it. And his morality and his ethics and what he's trying to protect allow him to say that in his mind with no guilt or conscience whatsoever. It's sort of like a pathological liar. They tell their lies often enough, they actually think that what they lie about was the truth. And that's why Bob Kerry, he's an unusually good liar. That's because he has no shame, no consequence, no guilt, conscience whatsoever about any of it. So he can sound like, well, she didn't know about that when she was in charge of it. I never told anybody I had those 2012. We're trying to speed those documents up. I don't know what Russia's doing. He can bring this stuff off as though it's the truth because in his mind, it is. And because he says it's the truth. The truth is an abstract thing. What he says is the truth in his mind is the truth. And the same thing with Hillary. She's just not quite as good at it yet. Brent Bozell, the Media Research Center, has published a column on all of this. And Hillary's Airtight Archives is what this column is entitled. He ran it yesterday. I'll give you just a couple pull quotes in it. Back in 1992, no one in the media banged a can as the Clintons failed to release federal tax returns in the late 70s. Now, inside those returns was proof that Hillary Clinton had made a mysterious $100,000 fortune from a $1,000 investment in the highly risky cattle futures market. It's bad enough that the media to this very day has never gotten to the bottom of that smelly and mysterious quid pro quo with Hillary's pal Jim Blair, the lobbyist for Tyson Chicken. How many more episodes of Team Clinton's corruption are still locked away in Hillary's airtight archives? Many Hillary-loving pundits ganged up on Russert in 2000. I had forgotten this till I read the piece. Many Hillary-loving pundits ganged up on Russert in 2000 when he asked Hillary in a Senate debate if she regretted misleading the American people when she claimed the Monica Lewinsky sexual shenanigans would not be proven true, and whether she would apologize for branding people who deplored the Lewinsky affair as a vast right-wing conspiracy. Journalists from Geraldo Rivera to Gail Collins of the New York Times scorned Russert for punching below the belt. The point is that there's evidence of these people hiding all kinds of things, lying about all kinds of things. Your kid lies to you repeatedly. Your first thought when he tells you anything is he's lying. Why is that not the assumption made with the Clintons? When they tell you anything, it'd be very intelligent and a wise thing to do, to doubt them. And yet, so many people don't seem to. They look past it because the Clintons represent something else to them. In large part, the only chance to beat the evil conservatives and Republicans. Let's go to Las Vegas. John, hi. Welcome to the EIB Network, sir. You're up first today.
Hi, Rush. Just want to let you know, me and my wife are registered independents, and we've been discussing at length what's going on with Hillary and Bill's comment that the good old boys are piling up on her, you know, this poor little woman. And my wife's comment last night was, well, what's going to happen when Ahdinejad and Putin and Chavez and Castro pile onto her if and when she's president? Is Bill going to come out or maybe getting on a plane to go to every capital in Russia and in Iran and berate them about the way they're treating Hillary? I mean, it's utterly ridiculous. If she can't stand up to the heat of these boys, how is she going to handle these dictators?
She can stand it. That's not what this is about. She can look at this is Nurse Ratched. This is the woman with the testicle lockbox. This is a woman about whom it's said she's not warm. She's not friendly. All of these things are accurate portrayals. She's not going to cower and blanch from anybody. She runs Bill's life. She got him on a probably a 3-mile leash. If he's got 3 miles he can play around in, but beyond that, she'll start reeling him in. She's running this show. That's what makes this even more reprehensible. It's all an act to try to win the election. It's nothing but positioning and posturing and pandering. It illustrates that she doesn't have the talent to do this. What it adds up to is that she is not willing to show herself as she is in this campaign. So all of this, the boys are piling on. It's unfair. You can't hit the girl. She probably laughs at that herself, but if it'll work, she'll use it because it did work once with Rick Lazio. So it's just an old page in the playbook brought back to life. She's not going to cower from anybody. That's again, that's what makes this so disingenuous. It's all an act. Every bit of this is an act. From the driver's license statements and flip-flops, well, that wasn't an act. She was caught short on that. She was totally unprepared. But the act is the various stratagems that they have used since then to try to put this to bed, and it won't go to bed. Nobody's willing to get in bed with her. They can't put it to bed. They can't put her to bed. They didn't. Well, that's about as, yeah, I agree. That's about as disgusting as the piling on analogy. I'm sorry, folks. I take a bit. Do you think I'm sexy? What a bump song to play during a discussion of Hillary Clinton. Hear the latest from Hillary as she's now admitted that the debate, she wasn't at her best. I wasn't at my best the other night in the debate. They're trying everything they can to defuse this and put it to bed. You know, every time I'm watching the shuttle land, and every time I watch this, I am literally amazed that this thing comes back from 200 miles above the earth with no power to land on a 20,000-foot runway at Cape Canaveral. It drops like a rock. The glide ratio of this, every time I tell this to aviation experts, this is no big deal. Well, I'll tell you what, I wouldn't want to be in an airplane up there with all power gone at 35,000 feet and try to glide down. We've had this discussion. People say it can be done, but this just amazes me. And that spacewalk this guy did over the weekend to fix that solar panel, that was unbelievable. We take too much of this for granted.